In its quest to provide an open forum for discussion of controversial issues, this station allows hosts and their guests to express themselves without any significant censorship. You are advised that any view expressed by the host or their guest are not necessarily the views of the owners or management of TogiNet Radio, Togi Entertainment, or the Owners Group, Inc.
Welcome to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com. And hosted by editor-in-chief of Officer.com and 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Officer Radio is your source for the latest news, trends, and issues facing the law enforcement community. Join us each week as Officer Borelli and his guest examine, dissect, and discuss the issues facing our industry. Call in live and join the conversation to get your voice heard. Now, let's get to it. It's Officer Radio, live with Frank Borelli on Officer.com.
Good day and welcome to Officer Radio, brought to you by Officer.com. I'm your host, editor for Officer.com, Frank Borelli. I'll be joined by several guests today as our show focuses on honoring the fallen. It's an unfortunate reality that law enforcement professionals sometimes die in the line of duty. While those courageous men and women enter the law enforcement profession and go to work each day knowing the risks, I speak from experience when I tell you that none of them went to work expecting to die. Obviously not because I died in the line of duty. Some of y'all have a nice chuckle because it didn't come out quite right. No officer goes to work expecting to die. We go to work, we expect to do our shift. Maybe it's a little bit longer, maybe it's a little bit busier, maybe it's a little bit slower, but we expect to go home at the end of the day, evening, night, whatever we're working, we expect to go home to our friends and family. None of us expect to die in the line of duty. We recognize it as a risk that's there, not one that we expect to deal with today. Instead, those officers went to work ready to sacrifice for an often unappreciative public in the name of keeping the peace and upholding justice. So that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to honor these fallen brothers and sisters, the warriors who have given themselves in the name of keeping the peace and serving justice. Joining me on today's show will be Mr. Craig Floyd, Chairman and CEO of the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund, the organization that runs the Law Enforcement Memorial in Judiciary Square in our nation's capital. Mr. Floyd and I will be discussing the Law Enforcement Memorial, its history, development, and some upcoming future endeavors. We'll talk about how many names are currently on the walls at the memorial, as well as some names that are added each year that aren't names of officers who made the ultimate sacrifice just last year. Some extra names get added every year, and we're going to talk to them about that. We'll talk about the Memorial Museum that's under construction, some of what it will or may hold, and what kind of timeline there is for it to be open. Finally, time permitting, we'll talk about Police Week 2012 and what you, our listeners, can do to support the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. After that, we're going to talk to Mr. Chuck Canterbury, the National President of the Fraternal Order of Police. Mr. Canterbury and I are going to talk about the National FOP, some of its history, its contemporary purpose, and the role it plays each year during Police Week. I myself am a member of the Fraternal Order of Police. I'm the state trustee for my lodge. I think that the FOP is often misunderstood. So we're going to talk about its purpose in today's setting. We're going to discuss any training initiatives or policy recommendations that the National FOP has developed, endorsed, or supports that may help reduce line of duty deaths, because ultimately that's our goal. Zero line of duty deaths. One is too many. Hopefully he and I will have time to talk about how the economy and budgets nationwide have affected manpower and law enforcement and what impact that reduced manpower has had on officer safety. Finally, again, we're going to talk about what you all listening can do to support the National FOP. If you're officers and you're not a member, I strongly encourage you to seek out your local lodge and join up. After that, we're going to talk to Mr. Bill Finnegan, founder and president of the American First Responder Institute. Mr. Finnegan and I are going to talk about the American First Responder Institute, AFRI. It's a brand new organization that he started. We're going to talk about the genesis of it, the need for it, and why he took it on. Just recently, last Friday, September 9th, the AFRI had an awards event, and we're going to talk about that, how it went, as well as a couple of the public safety personnel who were honored. We're going to talk about what support, if any, the AFRI is receiving from elected officials, and again, what we can do to support this nonprofit organization. All three of these organizations represented today are nonprofit. I strongly encourage you to support them all. We all should. They support us. And, you know, we all have to help each other out. It's what we do, again, so that we can go home alive at the end of our shift. Throughout the show, as time permits, we'll be taking calls from listeners. The number to dial in is 877-864-4869. That's 877-864-4869. If you have a comment, question, observation, or other thought to share, please don't hesitate to dial me up. If for any reason you're uncomfortable calling, feel free to send me an email, and I'll check it every few minutes as I go through the show. The email address is frankborelli@officer.com. No dits, dots, dashes, or spaces. It's all one word, FrankBorelli, @officer.com. And before I forget to mention it, today's show will be archived on the Officer.com radio page as well as our podcast page. To find it for reference or future listening, just go to Officer.com and on the top navigation bar, click on the Media Center. In our Media Center on the blue navigation bar, you'll see the link for Officer.com radio right next to the link for our podcast library. Go ahead and bookmark either one or both. I'm sure a lot of our future shows are going to focus on training issues, and we hope that they'll serve as good reference material. In fact, we're already planning a show that's talking about the ongoing evolution of active shooter response. We've got so much of a focus on terrorism, we can't lose focus on the spontaneous, completely ludicrous, unexpected violence that occurs across our nation. It's not in the news focus so often, we forget about it. But it's there. It exists. We have to deal with it. So we'll talk about that on a future show. But there will be – all these shows will be archived. You might want to come back and listen to them or use them for reference material. One last plug before we get into the meat of the show. Officer.com has both a Facebook fan page and a Twitter feed. Any updates we plan for this radio show, schedule, guests, etc. will be posted and tweeted accordingly. Please like us on Facebook or become a fan. Follow us on Twitter. Not only do we appreciate the interaction, but it allows us to serve your information needs better. You give us feedback on how we're doing, and then we can adjust what we're doing to serve you all the better. So with all that out of the way, let's get into honoring the fallen. As I sit here talking to you today, I've got the officer.com page open for line of duty deaths. Look at some of these headlines. Louisiana police officer killed in a fiery wreck. All too often, traffic accidents, accidents in or on the roadways, whether we're at a traffic stop or assisting a motorist, cleaning up another traffic accident, anything. Anytime we're out there in or near traffic, we're at risk. And it's a risk that all too often costs us, probably a fourth to a third of the time. In our line of duty deaths, it can be attributed to traffic or in some way connected to traffic. Honolulu officer fatally hit at a traffic stop. This year we've seen too many officers shot. It's not a comment on gun control. It's not a comment on people who are legally armed. Early in the year, I think in January, we had 11 officers that we lost in a 24-hour time frame. Four of them were in Lakewood, and you know, they were ambushed. Officer ambushes at the beginning of the year seemed on the increase, and it cost us a lot. It cost us a lot of good officers, fallen brother and sister warriors. It's a shame to see it. So we have New Orleans officer shot, suspect arrested. New York police officer tried to kill himself. All too often as well, the stresses of the job, if we don't have the proper support systems, can leave officers feeling like they don't have any other option but to take their own life. We'll have a separate show dedicated to that. You know, it's a shame that we can be so close in this profession to each other. We can call each other brother and sister. We have social organizations. We have fraternal organizations. You know, we work together. We party together. We take our families on vacations together. We do all this stuff, and sometimes we still feel so alienated we can't talk to each other about our problems. Or we put ourselves in such a mental frame of mind of being so different that we don't know how to voice what's on our mind, even to our closest friend. We've got to get past that. We need to be able to talk to each other or somebody, a member of the clergy, a psychologist, psychiatrist, You know, the bartender's probably not a good guy. He's a nice guy if you're just talking to him. But if he's the guy who's hearing all of your problems, you're trying to solve your problems the wrong way, in my opinion. Take that for what it's worth. 2 cents. Your mileage may vary. You know, I look at these headlines and these line of duty deaths, and folks, it's just unacceptable. You know, as I said earlier, one death is too many. We had 152 of them last year. We have a catchphrase, Officer World, as a conference that's actually being held in Washington, D.C. during National Police Week 2012. And the catchphrase is, some records weren't meant to be broken. 152 deaths is too many. And that was the number in 2010, the number that we lost. When you look back at the numbers, we had and I looked back until the year 2000, 162 in 2000, 240 in 2001, obviously a number that was larger because of the terrorist attacks of September 11th. We talked about that last week. 157 in 2002, that's close to the 2010 number, 149 in 2003, 165 in 2004, 162 in 2005, 155 in 2006. These numbers are all in the 150s, 160s, 189 in 2007. You got to wonder what happened. 141 in 2008. 122 in 2009. We saw a decrease, and that's, you know, 122. I hate to say it's a good number, but it's 40 less than in 2004. 152 in 2010. These numbers have got to shrink. We need to figure out what we can do to increase our chances of going home alive without completely alienating the public that we serve. You know, every day, like I said, we go to work, we go on shift, we go to roll call, we get the information that we need to go out on the street and be safe. Hopefully, for the love of goodness, ladies and gentlemen, if you wear a uniform, please tell me you've got on a vest. Tell me you maintain your equipment. Tell me you've qualified, not just to the bare minimum standard, but to double the minimum standard, to quadruple the minimum standard. If you've had the dream, and all of y'all know what I'm talking about with the quote-unquote dream, if you've had a dream where your gun doesn't work or when you shoot the bad guy nothing happens, you haven't been to the range frequently enough. That's what your subconscious is telling you. So when we come back, we're getting ready to go to break in a few moments. When we come back, we'll have Mr. Craig Floyd of the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund, and we're going to talk about that and Police Week 2012. We look forward to coming back with you guys. Call in if you want. Email if you feel like it.
Want to get your voice heard about law enforcement issues? This is your show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com. And we'll be back with more right after these. Lindale Link with host Holly Rand comes Mondays at 10 a.m. Central on Toginet.com.
Linda Link is Lindell's first and only internet radio broadcast.
Holly, tell us about it.
It's really something from my heart that I want to be teamwork for the entire community to get the word out about everything that's going on here. We're talking to the entire community of Lindell. This is not limited to just businesses or just parents or just teachers. Simply, to get the word out about your cause or your company, you must go to where the people are. And today, people are on the internet.
Lindale Link.
Lindale, Texas is a growing chain of business, education, commerce, community. Together, Lindale Link can create one strong chain of communication.
Check out LindaleLink.com and then check out Lindale Link, the radio show. Lindale Link with host Holly Rand. Mondays at 10 a.m. Central on Toginet.com. Booyah! That's the word uttered when you know you have the upper hand. Or you're the winner. Well, now, we have the Booyah Radio Hour with Martin Bressy. Tuesdays at 9, 8 Central on Toginet.com. Martin's show is all about helping speakers and authors find their niche, create their brand, and achieve massive success. Each week, Martin will interview guests from around the world who have achieved tremendous success as speakers and authors. You'll find out who they are, what they do, and how you can follow in their footsteps to achieve incredible results. Guests will come from around the world of business, entertainment, finance, the arts, and sciences. Nothing is off topic. No subject too taboo. We'll share valuable information as well as huge laughs as we discover the ups and downs of being a successful speaker and author. The Booyah Radio Hour with Martin Pressey. Tuesdays at 9, 8 Central on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by Editor-in-Chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Morelli. Now, let's get back to the show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Frank Morelli, editor of Officer.com, and your host for the afternoon. And joining us as our first guest today is Mr. Craig Floyd, chairman and CEO of the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. Good afternoon, Mr. Floyd. How are you today, sir?
Frank, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
I appreciate you taking the time out of your day. You and I have met before. We've had lunch, and I've dealt with some of your staff members and trying to get appointments with you, and it's not a complaint, but I know how hectic your schedule is, about, what, 28 hours a day, so I really appreciate you being with us this afternoon.
I heard your prelim, by the way. I was able to listen in a little bit, and you're right on target. I mean, the numbers lately have been staggering, and always like the opportunity like we have today to talk about what we can do to make it safer for our officers and get some important reminders out there, as you just did before the break.
Absolutely. And I'm sitting here as we talk looking at the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund website, NLEOMF.org, for our listeners. And I'm looking at these numbers, for the preliminary numbers for 2011, obviously up 15%. And not only is it staggering, but it chokes me up. I can't believe that we're losing our peacekeepers at this rate this year. Is there anything we can attribute this to?
Well, I think we have several problems at work. It's almost like the perfect storm. On the one hand, we're asking officers to do more than ever before. Not only are they fighting conventional crime as they have for hundreds of years, but obviously since 9/11, that we're asking them to fight this war on terror. And that requires a lot of different skill sets, a lot of different technology and equipment. And unfortunately, all of that is coming at the same time that we're cutting back on law enforcement agency budgets across this country. We're giving them fewer dollars for training, fewer dollars for equipment, fewer dollars for manpower, fewer officers on the street. So all of that adds up to increased risk for the officers serving us so well here in the United States. Now, you add to those ingredients for trouble the fact that we have a more cold-blooded, brazen criminal element prowling the streets of America. I think every officer you talk to, Frank, and I know you've talked to so many of them, they tell you the same thing they tell me, and that is the criminals they're running up against are more cold-blooded than ever. Many of them don't think twice about shooting a police officer, and that's one of the reasons why we've seen nearly a 30% increase this year in the number of officers who have been shot and killed.
I know January was horrendous with the Lakewood attack and other ambushes. I think we lost 11 officers in 24 hours. It was bad. And, you know, I have my nice little organization schedule. I didn't mean to bring that up with you, but it's so important. And I'll be getting comment from Chuck Canterbury, who I know you know from the National FOP pretty well.
Great friend and supporter. Yeah,
absolutely. It's so hard to wrap my mind around it. But before I go down that path and completely lose myself, tell me about give us a brief history, if you will, of the memorial. I mean, it's been there 20 plus years. I didn't even go there until 5 years ago. My wife always believed that if she came to the memorial with me in the following year sometime, I was going to get killed in the line of duty. So she didn't want to come down. I hadn't come down until 5 or 6 years ago, and I've been kicking myself mentally for it ever since. It's just a phenomenally emotionally impacting experience to go there. Give us a brief history of it, if you would.
Well, I had the good fortune right out of college here in Washington, D.C., to work for a congressman named Mario Biaggi. Mario Biaggi was a congressman from New York City who, before that, served for 23 years as a New York City police officer. And bottom line is, Congressman Biaggi was the go-to person in Congress when you had a law enforcement issue that need dealing with. So He taught me all about law enforcement. We did a lot of good legislative work together on behalf of law enforcement. One of the bills we introduced was to build a national law enforcement officers memorial. We'd never taken the time in this nation's history to properly honor the service and sacrifice of America's law enforcement professionals. So we erected a monument in 1991, dedicated it on October 15, 1991, coming up on our 20th anniversary of this memorial. And proudly inscribed on the memorial walls today are 19,298 names of law enforcement officers who have been killed in the line of duty, dating back to the first death, a New York State Sheriff named Cornelius Hogaboom, who was shot and killed in 1791. So every year since then, we've been able to document the deaths that have occurred. We had a lot of research that had to be done early on. It was around 1988, actually, when we decided to put names of fallen officers on the memorial. And so we engaged in the first ever research effort to document those officers who had been killed in the line of duty, dating back to the earliest days of our history. And it was a monumental task. And every year, we end up finding officers who died many, many years ago who'd been forgotten about. They'd slipped through the cracks of history. And through our research efforts, we have three full-time researchers here at the Memorial Fund who process these cases, who look up the older deaths, who track down leads, and ultimately we get the name of that officer who died in the line of duty on the memorial walls. And as you know, Frank, you all help us every year with a wonderful feed over the internet of the live candlelight vigil on May 13th every year at the memorial. And thanks to the help of Officer.com, we can feed that out to the nation, anybody who can't attend in person. And we read the names of the officers who were added that year. This past year, we added 316 new names to the officers' memorial.
You know, that's probably the most emotionally moving event that happens every year during Police Week. And, like you said, Officer.com, we live stream it on the internet, and I think it's one of the least things we can do to support it and the community that we serve. But I'm a police officer. And I'm the only one who happens to work at Officer.com, and I'm blessed to be here in the position I'm in as an editor. And it's been interesting for me to see people who have never been to the memorial, who really haven't been that involved in the community, come down there, go to the candlelight vigil, and completely break down in tears because of the impact of it. And there's just no way to describe it, Craig. I've been down there, and I've met with fallen officers' children, fallen officers' widows or widowers, both. It's really a way to slap people in the face with the sacrifice that the law enforcement officers make. We as a whole community need to thank you and the NLEOMF for everything you do and building it and keeping it and maintaining it. And all that research was one of the things I was going to ask you about, those extra names that got added. But let me ask you this. You've got a museum that's under construction to go hand in hand with the memorial. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, so many visitors that come to that memorial ask the question, you know, tell me the stories behind these names on the marble walls. And so many people that visit that memorial are school kids, for example, from out of state. They don't necessarily know the stories behind the officers in their community who died in the line of duty. So that was one of the driving forces behind this museum concept, is what can we do to help people better understand the level of service and sacrifice of America's law enforcement professionals. And one of the things we can do is tell those stories behind the 19,298 names on the wall. And so we've created this concept of a National Law Enforcement Museum, which is now underway. It's actually being constructed as we speak, just a few blocks from where I'm sitting, right across the street from the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial. It'll be right there where the memorial is. And one of the key exhibit galleries that we'll have in that museum is called Hall of Remembrance. And that Hall of Remembrance is where people will go to learn the stories behind the men and women who have made the ultimate sacrifice. But the museum will tell the complete story of law enforcement history in the United States, dating back to the earliest colonial days all the way through the present, talking about all the changes that occurred after 9/11, for example. And we're going to make it a high-tech, interactive museum experience. It's not enough to just put artifacts and documents under glass and expect to get an ooh and an ah out of your visitors and have some sort of meaningful educational experience. But when you make it experiential, when you make it interactive, all of a sudden now people are literally walking in the shoes of a police officer. They get to engage in the shoot, don't shoot judgmental simulator and understand the split-second life or death decisions officers often face and how tough it is to make the right decision. We have a forensic science lab. You learn how forensic science is used to solve crimes. We have a reel-to-reel gallery where we'll show clips from the old movies and TV shows, comparing and contrasting how Hollywood has portrayed law enforcement with the realities. Motorola sponsoring a 911 emergency call center where the visitor becomes the dispatcher. And these are the experiences you're going to have in that museum.
That task again, you know, as like I said, as a police officer, I think it will be phenomenal to see people, especially in that shooting simulation situation where they've got to realize it's a split second decision and it better be the right one, or you end up paying for it for either for the rest of your life or with your life, and neither one of them is a good thing. We're down to about our 2 minute warning, Craig. Let me ask you one last question: are there any new events being added for Police Week 2012 that you want to make sure our listeners know about?
Well, I think the important things to know about Police Week are it's a proven formula of success that we've been doing now for more than 20 years. The candlelight vigil, as you mentioned, on May 13th will continue to be the centerpiece. We'll have our Officer of the Month luncheon where we honor active officers who've been serving so well across this country. The Police Unity Tour arrival ceremony on May 12th of every year in the afternoon is always one of the highlights. They are our top donor. And the Police Unity Tour bicyclists, officers, survivors on bicycles who ride some 300 miles to Washington, usually give us a check for this past year, $1.5 million. We're so fortunate to have them as a beneficiary. And this year, and I don't know all the details, you could probably tell your listeners better than I, but I understand Officer.com is planning a law enforcement safety symposium at the Ronald Reagan Building that's going to allow officers in town for Police Week to engage in some very important law enforcement safety training. And as you pointed out at the beginning of the segment, we need to do a lot more to make it safer for our officers. So I applaud you all for wanting to do that, and I think that'll be a critical piece of National Police Week in 2012.
Well, it's one more thing we can do, and anything that keeps our officers coming home alive is what we need to do. Thank you for your time today, Craig. We're getting ready to go to break, and we'll be back with Mr. Chuck Canterbury from the National FOP.
Want to get your voice heard about law enforcement issues? This is your show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com. And we'll be back with more right after these. Renowned and gifted psychic medium, Sylvia Rossi, explores the mysteries of this life, the afterlife, and the unseen world that surrounds us all in the show called Make Contact. With Sylvia Rossi, Wednesdays at 2, 1 p.m. Central here on TogiNet. Sylvia Rossi with her special guests and other fellow psychics invite you to call in and make contact with the world beyond and get answers to your questions. Psychic medium Sylvia Rossi has been sharing her gift professionally for the last 17 years. Sylvia has made it her mission to help individuals and families understand their eternal connection to loved ones that have passed on, bringing relief and comfort to countless souls who have been touched by her gift. She's had the privilege of meeting and working with many psychologists who continue to recommend their clients to her when conventional methods have failed. Now it's your turn to make contact with host and psychic medium Sylvia Rossi, Wednesdays at 2, 1 p.m. Central on TogiNet.com. Okay, we will. We're going to teach you how to tell your money where to go. It's Intelligent Investing with Pam Otten. on TogiNet. Learn how to be a savvy investor from someone who has your best interest at heart. Pam Otten is a financial advisor who loves to help successful business owners and entrepreneurs understand the mysteries of the investment world. And she's not afraid to share that knowledge. Pam is an unashamed Christian and qualified kingdom advisor, which means she's trained and committed to integrating biblical principles into her financial advice. Pam believes investing isn't rocket science. This is the financial advisor who's in your corner and truly understands and cares about you and helping you achieve your goals. Securities and advisory services are offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC. It's Intelligent Investing with Pam Otten on TogiNet. Welcome back to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by editor-in-chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Now, let's get back to the show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters and listeners that support us in the community. We're here today honoring the fallen. As I mentioned earlier, I happen to be a member of the Fraternal Order of Police. I'm the state trustee for my lodge, and I'm a big believer in the Fraternal Order of Police. It's helped me out through my career. Joining us for our second segment today is Mr. Chuck Canterbury. He's the national president for the Fraternal Order of Police. It's my first day with a new tongue. Forgive me. Chuck, how are you doing this afternoon, sir?
I'm great, Frank. How about you?
Well, as long as I can keep my tongue out from between my teeth, I'm doing okay. I'm still new to this radio business, so I stutter every now and then. But other than that, I'm doing pretty good. Listen, thanks for joining us this afternoon. I don't know if you heard the segment before. We just got done with Mr. Craig Floyd from the memorial. He spoke very highly of you and the national FOP. I believe he referred to you as the greatest supporter and good friend. And I love to hear that about my FOP. It's got to make you feel good to hear that coming from somebody like him.
As most law enforcement officers know, Craig Floyd and the National Law Enforcement Officer Memorial and the FOP have been hand-in-hand since day one. You know, we are the parenting agency of concerns of police survivors. Through membership in the National Auxiliary, members from our group started COPS. So we've been an integral partner with the museum and the wall from day one, and Craig's a great supporter of the FOP, and we very much appreciate our relationship.
You know, I think it's a good example of how different pieces in the community have to work together. You know, today we're talking about honoring the fallen and trying to find ways to reduce the number of officers that die in the line of duty every year, and it takes more than just police officers acting a certain way or exercising certain tactics. It takes support from the community and some understanding. Would you agree? And is there anything particular you think we need to work on in that venue?
Well, I do agree. And the FOP is part of an international group. And one of the things that we've been discussing on the international level is that we have to stop the violence against police. It's at all-time highs. In places like New Zealand, where the law enforcement officers are not armed, they had two killed in the line of duty with firearms last year, 7 shot. And those are things that are unheard of. So we're working alongside our international partners with a Stop the Violence campaign. And, you know, it's not just those that are killed in the line of duty, Frank. 56,000 police officers are assaulted every year by a small portion of the population. And there's two things that we have to do. One is those people that are arrested and charged with assaulting a police officer must face severe penalties. And then we need the public to stand up and say, it's not okay to hit us. It's not okay to assault police. And we really find generally that the American public believes that, but sometimes we need them to stand up and say it.
You know, Chuck, I couldn't agree with you more, and I wanted to talk to you about the history of the FOP, but this is an even more driving topic for me. You know, I grew up watching Andy Griffith, and I mean, you don't know my history. My father was a lawyer who became a district court judge, and he was very disappointed when I became a policeman until he saw what my brother officers did, until he went on some ride-alongs and really experienced it firsthand. And, you know, I grew up being told by this man, if you're ever in trouble, if you ever need help, find a guy in the blue uniform. The policemen are there to help you. And next year will be 30 years for me in law enforcement. And it just drives me nuts to hear parents tell their kids, be good or the policeman's going to arrest you. And I have to believe that that's where that negative outlook against law enforcement begins at such a young age. These parents are passing this bad message.
Well, absolutely. And Frank, you know, as a police officer, when you were walking through the store, any department store, and you heard that, you really wanted to turn around and say, no, but I may arrest your mother if she keeps saying that.
Yeah, I'd love to, but we couldn't do that, Chuck.
No, you couldn't do that, but I mean, it's really important for, you know, we have Code Adam around where the business world has initiated programs through the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children to teach children to go to adults and ask for help. And then we turn around and make threats like that to our children. And, you know, unfortunately, I believe that the parents that make those threats are the children that we're going to need to see the most.
Probably, but, you know, I always went out of my way, and I'm not patting myself on the back. I've seen tons of officers do this. They hear that statement. They turn around. They get down on one knee. They get eye level with that child and say, you know, I'm not going to tell you your mom's wrong, but I'm not going to – you know, my goal is not to arrest you. My goal is to help you. If you ever need assistance, don't forget that. That's what I just told you. I've seen so many officers do that, and it's heartwarming. You see some of those kids, their eyes really get bright, and they look like, wow, this cop, he took the time to talk to me on my level. And it's a beautiful moment if the kid hasn't already been beaten down too bad by their parents.
Right. I agree wholeheartedly. I think that's what I've seen my whole career.
But, all right, now I'm going to step back into some of the notes that I had sent you, things we wanted to talk about. How in the world did the FOP get started? I mean, obviously it's been around a lot longer than either one of us has been a policeman. Can you tell us where it began and how?
Yeah, the FOP started in 1915 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, when police officers were working 12-hour shifts, 7 days a week, had absolutely no way to provide for their families on meager salaries. And officers got together and said, we want to sit down and talk to the city. And, of course, at 1915, public employees in this country did not enjoy any of the rights that they've earned over the last 96 years. But they formed the Fraternal Order of Police to address those problems. And at first, they were harassed by management at the police department, and finally, the mayor stood up and said, support those boys. I want you to work with them. And that's how we were born, and since then, we've branched out to 45 states, two countries, and over 330,000 members in 96 years.
That's fantastic. And, you know, we need to make the observation for our listeners that you know, we see all kinds of news today about unions and labor committees, and there's this huge political debate about what's right and what's wrong, and I don't get into all that. What I focus on is, you know, if you have a police officer who's working 12, 14, 16 hours a day without a day off in a week, his officer survival risk goes up. His chances of getting hurt, you know, of being injured because of fatigue, of missing something that, you know, he misses a cue that might have saved his life if he caught it because he's too tired. You know, those are the kinds of things that we need to keep our officers from having to work under the conditions that will increase their risk.
Oh, absolutely. And Frank, you know, even if you don't want to talk about the union part, there are no safety rules in law enforcement that were not brought on by rank and file. Bulletproof vests, resistant vests. Right. Forced onto departments by officers who wanted to go home to their families. And the list just goes on and on. Two-man cars in zones that have high assault rates. Workman's compensation. The ability to, you know, to do your job, and then if you get hurt, not be put out to pasture without some sort of a benefit. And those are things that were all brought on by rank and file. You never see management offer those safety things unless the rank and file pushes them. The change in weapons we've had over the last 15 or 20 years, brought on by law enforcement officers who went out, got certified, got trained, became experts, and then went back and forced management to make those changes.
And, you know, and sometimes that's what it takes, but it goes to the heart of the matter. It shows the heart. It shows the motivation. It shows the dedication of the men and women in law enforcement and what they try to do for the community. And I'm not going to Chuck, I'm not disagreeing with anything you've said. Please don't take it that way. But I'm not going to badmouth management. I know some really great chiefs. Well, I know one or two or three of them. I know a whole lot of them.
Oh, sure.
One really blew my mind. She wanted her agency to have every piece of technology that was out there in the market today, but she didn't want her guys to have shotguns or rifles, even though there was a high school in her district where in her municipality where they had a race riot every second year, I guess. I mean, it was ludicrous, the outlook that she had, and certainly we have to fight that on an ongoing basis. Now, sometimes those good chiefs, they say we don't have the money, and that's an honest answer now with the economy and stuff hurting our budgets. What are we seeing nationwide? I mean, we're down hundreds of thousands of cops now across the last few years, aren't we?
We're 10,000 layoffs right now, 30,000 vacancies that haven't been filled around the country, with talks of continued layoffs. And what we're seeing is, for the first time since 1994, crime rates are going up substantially. We have cities that have laid off 40 to 50% of their agency, and their violent crime rates have gone up 60 to 67%. And that is just not correlated by bad economy. It means that the police presence on the street is not there. The criminals know it's not there, and they're violating the law.
And is there a correlation between that number and the increased attacks on law enforcement that we've seen?
No scientific data to prove that, but I think we, from a common sense standpoint, absolutely, right. We believe that fewer officers on the street is going to increase the injuries and people wanting to commit that crime. I mean, it's like I said earlier, I really don't believe that there are hundreds of people out there waiting to assault police officers, but I do believe that when you put somebody in a situation where you're going to take their civil liberties and they know there's nobody to come and help you, I think it's going to increase the amount of people that, if nothing else, resist arrest. Maybe not attack officers, but as the resisting arrest is not like it is on the one-hour TV show in the afternoon. The cavalry doesn't always get there.
And the cop doesn't always win. And I remember being taught at a young age the three most dangerous words I could say was "you're under arrest," because that was the greatest. That was the moment where you had your greatest chance of getting that resistance, which you can end up in loss of life or serious injury. We're under our 2 minute mark, Chuck. Let me ask you something. And we'll try to keep it brief, although we could talk about this just for hours and hours. We talked last week about the 10th anniversary of 9/11. We're talking about budgets being cut, manpower being cut, crime rates on the rise. More is being demanded of our officers every day now. Is there an answer without budgets being increased? What can we do, if anything?
Well, the sharing of information has always been key in that, and frankly, the sharing of information from all the sources is still not to a level that we're satisfied with. I serve on the President's Homeland Security Advisory Council, and the interoperability of radios is still a huge issue. The D-block is out there. Spectrum is out there. Now that the administration's promised $10 billion for the build-out, we believe that radio communications is going to help. But the information sharing, where it actually gets down to the street level, is the most important thing we've got to do.
Okay. Well, we're going to end on that note, Chuck. I really appreciate your time today. Thank you for everything you do, the National FOP does. And I think I'm going to see you at a meeting coming up here before too long. I'll express my appreciation for your time then a different way as well.
All right. Thanks, brother.
Have a good one, Chuck. Listeners, we'll be back after this break with Mr. Bill Finnegan from the American First Responder Institute. Talk to you then.
Want to get your voice heard about law enforcement issues? This is your show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com. And we'll be back with more right after these. Cease and Me is on TogiNet, a delightful, thoughtful, serious, and not-so-serious call-in show with Cecil Murphy and Twyla Belk. Tuesday nights at 8, 7 Central on TogiNet.com. You know Cease is the veteran author from 90 Minutes in Heaven, Gifted Hands, When a Man You Loved Was Abused, and many other books, as well as a mentor for writers. And Twyla Belk is an effervescent force known as the Gotta Tell Somebody Gal. She's also a writer and motivational speaker who's always bragging on God. For more on Cecil Murphy, go to his website, Cecil Murphy, that's PHEY.com. And for Twyla, GottaTellSomebody.com. The show, Cease and Me, is a far-reaching, faith-based shared conversation and call-in show with questions welcome. A chance to get everything out in the open.
From questions about riding to surviving sexual abuse to the topics of the day, all from a Christian worldview to help you. Season Me, Cecil Murphy, Twyla Belk, Tuesday evenings at 8, 7 Central on TogiNet.com. Get ready for the Not-So-Soccer Mom, Tuesday afternoons at 1 Eastern, noon Central, on TogiNet with Jill Hickey. You name it, from politics to pop culture to Jill's search for the perfect bronzer and chicken salad. The Not-So-Soccer Mom will weigh in on it all. The sentence, "I have no opinion about that," is one that Jill has never uttered. In the early 90s, Jill finally decided to put her thoughts, opinions, mom advice, love of pop culture, hummus, and Starbucks, working out, cosmetic shopping, and politics into an actual website, and thus NotSoSoccerMom.com. Com was born. Shortly after her fourth child, a boy, Jerome, now she's really got tons of topics to share with you. This is Laugh Out Loud Funny, and we're not kidding. What's a loud Nebraska girl who lived in Little Rock for many years and now is up in the Northeast doing? Chronicling her opinions on everything. The wheels aren't off yet, but it's close. It's the Not-So-Soccer Mom with Jill Hickey, Tuesday afternoons at 1 Eastern, noon Central, on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by editor-in-chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Now, let's get back to the show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com.
All right, listeners, welcome back. So far today, we've heard from Mr. Craig Floyd at the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. Excellent work that they do. We've heard from Mr. Chuck Canterbury, president of the National FOP, the Fraternal Order of Police, and the excellent work that they do. Now we're going to talk to a gentleman named Bill Finnegan, who's from Pennsylvania. Bill's a retired paramedic. He's a former Navy service veteran. He's a friend of mine, and he is also the founder and president of the American First Responder Institute. And we're going to talk about what AFRI does, honoring the fallen and honoring the still serving. Good afternoon, Bill. How are you today, sir?
Good afternoon, Frank. I'm having a great day.
Do you have any choice?
Say again?
Do you have any choice? You wake up above dirt. It's a great day, right?
Yeah, that's correct. That is correct.
All right. Bill, thanks for joining us this afternoon. I don't know if you've heard any earlier part of the show. You know, we talk about 152 police officers killed in the line of duty last year. Preliminary numbers, 133 so far this year. It's a 15% increase year over year so far. And it's just outrageous and unexpected. And quite frequently, we talk about honoring the fallen. Not too many people out there mix honoring the fallen with honoring the still serving, and that's which kind of makes AFRI unique. So give us a little bit of the background on the genesis of the American First Responder Institute and how it was developed.
All right. Thank you very much, Frank. The First Responder Institute is founded by seasoned law enforcement officers, firefighters, and myself. I'm a paramedic. And we created the organization for a number of reasons. And one of them is that there are no charitable organizations in the United States that address the needs of the families of the fallen across the board. There are no nationwide organizations. With due respect to the FOP, they have the FOP Foundation, and they do wonderful work. There are other organizations out there that do wonderful work, but there isn't 100% coverage of all first responders. So we decided to pay attention to the gaps and create a fund, the Homeland Heroes Fund, which is what we're working on. And the purpose of the Homeland Heroes Fund is to show up first responder fest every time there's a line of duty death and take care of the needs of the families of the fallen. And it isn't a fund where we have to get death certificate and birth certificate and a lot of other paperwork. This is a peer-to-peer review. And if it meets criteria, then it's our plan to provide for the immediate financial needs of the families of the fallen. And our challenge was, how do we find a sustainable source of revenue? And we came up with an interesting solution, and that was, if we standardize the way that police officers, firefighters, and paramedics are recognized for their service and for their sacrifice, for their heroism and valor and gallantry, using left chest medals the way the military does. There's a federal precedent to do this with the Federal Public Safety Officer Medal of Valor, that we could leverage the heroism of our brothers and sisters in uniform and use it to benefit the families who have paid the sacrifice, who share the burden of the sacrifice.
You know, Bill, you use words like heroism and valor and gallantry, And those aren't words you often hear used in to describe our public safety employees, our policemen, our firemen, our paramedics, EMTs. You don't often hear that talked about in their day-to-day duties. And I got to commend you for using the language. I'm not being critical in any way. I think we need to expand that in the industry. I mean, even amongst ourselves, you don't hear that kind of conversation. You don't hear that kind of recognition. And I think it's important that we do that. I want to thank you for using that kind of language. Listen, last Friday, September 9th, you had your first awards event, did you not?
Yes, sir, we did. We had it at a swank place called the Union League in Philadelphia, where you're not usually finding a lot of cops, firemen, and medics. This is a place where some of the more affluent members of the Philadelphia community gather, and one of the Union League members hosted an event, and we recognized the exceptional service of some individuals. It was an amazing night because we recognized firefighters, paramedics, we recognized law enforcement, and it was an event that kind of broke the mold. We are, as first responders, anyone who responds to 911 calls in our definition is a first responder. It doesn't matter whether you're full-time, part-time. We don't really care what your relationship with your employer is. If you do the job, you wear the uniform, and you take care of people, if you serve the mission to save lives, protect property, you're a first responder.
Amen.
And, yeah, we were recognizing the service and sacrifice of first responders, and we recognized a Philadelphia firefighter named Bobby Crossfield, who just did an absolutely amazing job a bunch of years ago, completely unrecognized. So we had the opportunity to recognize what he did at the Rising Sun Baptist Church fire. He ended up saving the lives of about 10 men. He was found unconscious, unresponsive in the basement of the church after an absolutely heroic stand against this fire. And one of the men whose lives he'd saved on September 11th was part of a Pennsylvania contingent of firefighters who went up to New York City. A lot of people aren't aware of the fact that some of the greatest technical rescue experts died on September 11th. They were part of FDNY, the founders of the profession. And FDNY was devastated on multiple levels. Having lost most of their technical experts, it was actually a contingent of Philadelphia firefighters as part of a federal task force, FEMA USAR task force, that went up and on the 12th started digging through the pile under the direction of a Philly firefighter that Bobby Crossfield saved his life years earlier. So it was a connection to September 11th. That man, Freddie Endricott, is now in charge of all 28 federal USAR teams, 150-man teams. So Bobby Crossfield's willingness to sacrifice his life, he did not die that day only because he's one of the toughest men I've ever met. Anybody else would have been dead, but not Bobby. We also had the widow of Deputy Kyle Taggerly from Berks County, Pennsylvania, who was killed in line of duty just this summer on June 28th as a canine handler. They went in as part of a regional task force to take out this bad actor. The bad actor disappeared into the woods. Deputy Taggerly and his dog Jinx went after him. The two exchanged gunfire, and Deputy Taggerly's AK-47 jammed the bad actor. Squeezed off a couple of rounds, went through his vest, and took the life of Deputy Taggerly, and with mortal wounds, went to a secondary weapon and took out the bad actor. We recognized his exceptional heroism and service and sacrifice by awarding making him the first named recipient of an award that we consider to be our most sacred, the Franklin Medal, which is the first responder equivalent to the Purple Heart. We also recognized a law enforcement officer who didn't respond to a 911 call, but who showed exceptional courage in an aspect of law enforcement that I believe that EMTs, paramedics, and firefighters and members of society need to understand better. And this is a detective from the Philadelphia Police Department named Jimmy Wood. He's a son of a cop, and all of his brothers are cops, and they're a legendary family in Philadelphia. He's a detective investigating narcotics, the OxyContin type stuff, and works directly for the DA's office. And he was investigating these street-level stuff, and it ended up taking him back to the guy who was writing the scripts. And the guy who was writing the scripts was running a medical facility, and as he was doing one of his first forays into this doctor's office, he found out that one of the patients who was being treated there had died. And he asked, well, you know, who here has medical credentials? And they said, well, no, nobody. And he said, hold on, wait. So if someone has died and he's being treated in a medical facility where no one has any medical credentials, that's homicide. He went back to his bosses. Yeah, he went back to his bosses. And his bosses said, Jimmy, stay in your lane. You're a narcotics cop. And his response was, yeah, narcotics cop.
Cop, exactly.
Exactly. And he pushed against it. There's other political things that happened around that job, and Jimmy put his career on the line and pursued it when it was not politically correct. He eventually got the attention of the district attorney of Philadelphia, and right around January 1st of this year, they brought down 7 counts of homicide against this doc, and they shut down the facility.
And, you know, it takes some guts to stand up to your bosses, and forgive me for interrupting you, but I mean, I've been there, done that. And when your sergeant, your lieutenant, your captain, your major, your lieutenant colonel, your chief all say, hey, leave it alone.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, when you see a violation of the law, you know, as a police officer, you know, it's funny enough, and I'm going to sidetrack here for a minute, Bill, and I apologize because we're under our 3-minute mark, and I'm going to take a few seconds to deal with this. You know, law enforcement is supposed to protect and serve. Nowhere in our, I mean, on my side of my car, it doesn't say protect and make arrests. It says protect and serve. Sometimes that service mandates an arrest. Sometimes that service, in the interest of peace and justice, mandates using officer discretion and not making an arrest. But to simply ignore crime because it's inconvenient to enforce the law at that moment in that way, that's just morally unacceptable to me, ethically unacceptable to me in the law enforcement profession. So I'm glad you all took the time and honored that. Thank you for sharing those stories with us. And again, I apologize for not being able to come up to that event. I do appreciate having been invited. For you listeners who know, I'm an advisory board member for the American First Responder Institute. Bill Finnegan's a friend of mine and a great man to have as a part of my life. I appreciate his friendship and the time that he's taken. Bill, just moving on to our next topic, and we're under our 2-minute mark now. Are you receiving any active support or recognition from elected officials at any governmental level?
We have the support of our local member of Congress, which is Bob Brady. And at our event on Friday night, he from the microphone said that he was going to support the organization financially. He hasn't given us details of how he's going to support the organization, but I have complete confidence that he's going to do what he says because that's his reputation. And also from the microphone, he mentioned that his father was a police officer. So we have his support, and through Congressman Brady, we have a pilot program that's been authorized in Philadelphia with the Philadelphia Police and Fire Departments, and we are including in that pilot program the surrounding counties because we realize that proving it works in Philadelphia proves one thing, that it works in Philadelphia. Which it might not work anywhere else.
Right.
So by getting it to work in Philadelphia and the surrounding counties, we'll have covered paid, volunteer, for-profit, non-profit, hospital-based EMS, deputy sheriffs, every type of law enforcement, fire service, and EMS that there is in the country is represented in those 5 counties.
Hey, Bill, I'm sorry. I know they're going to cut us off because we're down under our 10-second mark. Thank you for your time. Listeners, go to honoringheroes.com and support this organization. Honoring the Fallen was our show today. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for being a part of Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by Editor-in-Chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Each week,